Welcome to Open Gym, a weekly podcast bringing you the best ideas of the brightest minds in the gym business. My name is Patrick Cummings. I'm a brand coach to entrepreneurs, gym owners, and change makers, a longtime CrossFitter, and your host. Thank you so much for tuning into the show, and a big thank you to HSN Mentoring for sponsoring this episode. As mentioned last week, my plan for the next handful of episodes here on Open Gym is to highlight and amplify the voices of folks who are, in their own way, using fitness and the gym environment to help people who have too often been left out of the benefits of health and community. This week, we have part two of a conversation we started last episode with Noble Clay Fitness founder, Ben Davis. Ben has been a longtime coach, having worked closely with Kyle Maynard at No Excuses CrossFit before venturing off on his own to start what has become the nonprofit Noble Clay, a gym that is working hard to create sustainable opportunities for the underserved population of Atlanta. If you haven't yet, do go back to part one to hear more about Ben's background and the belief system he has in place that's pushing him toward this pursuit. In this episode, Ben and I discuss the business model of the gym, how he was able to find a board of directors to help him navigate the unknown, and what he's doing to strike the right balance between purpose and profit. We start off by talking about how specifically they're operating the gym on a day-to-day basis.
So it's an individual design model. It's all open gym, no pun intended there. And people have their own coach that is assessing them, providing a program design, reassessing them, and then refining the process. As they come in, they come into this open gym format and they perform their programming. And that happens with their fitness, that happens with their lifestyle stuff, and that happens with their nutrition. The model is, we created it, like I've said before, is like kind of like the YMCA of functional fitness. And when I say that, what I mean is the economic model. It's a scaled membership model. And okay. So we have it set up with three income levels. 75K or higher is what we would consider as a household income, is affluent. Mm-hmm. And they pay $297 a month, which is what we would consider as full market value for our coaching.
Okay.
It could be argued maybe it's worth a little bit more than that, but that's where we have it. Then we have the middle income earners, which are $40,000 to $74,000 household income. We call that the middle income earners. They pay a 50% subsidy, so $149 a month is their membership fee. And then scaled one more time is the under 40K household income, and that's on a sliding scale of 1% to 3%. And we did that, and we're not like perfectly, again, like you said, this model is evolving and we're still working to solidify it and show that it's viable. But that 1% to 3% is based on the individual situation. Mm-hmm. I tried to go, okay, well, Patrick, you know, you guys are like, what in CrossFit gyms, these affluent people, how much are they actually paying and investing in terms of percentage to their fitness? And it worked out to be around 1% to 3%. Of their net income is like what people were paying.
Yep.
Right. And so I said, okay, well, let's try to kind of follow that all the way down the line. And then I realized, well, whoa, we're not talking apples to apples here, because when, you know, for me, I'm a middle income earner. So for me, like, I still don't have to ask the question, am I going to pay for food this month, or am I going to pay rent? Mm-hmm. I don't have to wrestle with that. Under 40K wrestles with that question every day, every month. Am I going to pay rent right now, or am I going to pay for food? That's what's going on. And so it's like, it's not really the same, right? And so that's why we can move it down to 1% and even less than that for some people. But everyone has skin in the game. Everyone. Because we believe they're made in God's image and they're made with worth and human and dignity. And they can put, they're designed to work, right? They're designed to be responsible for their body, for what God's given them. And so for that, they need to bring something to the table. Mm-hmm. And they do. Our core value, one of our core values is nobility. And that core value kind of guides that outworking of that pricing. 1% to 3%. So a 1% person is typically a female that has children. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, they have to take care of a couple of children. They're female. And if like some of our 3% are single men or even single women that don't have children. Mm-hmm. So it's really the child factor is really where that sliding scale goes. Mm-hmm. And what we do is anybody that is subsidized at any level has to put a proof of income on file with us. And that can be a tax return or a pay stub or a copy of disability. Mm-hmm. We have some of that. That's the economic model. There's an onboarding fee and some other fees in there, but that's the economic model from the membership side. Now, we structured as a 501c3 nonprofit because we wanted to go, okay, we also need to get donors mm-hmm. as a foundational kind of bedding of the business so that we can continue to go in and serve those that don't have access to this.
Yep.
And so we have a donor base as well. And so really we have two clients that we serve. We serve our donors and we serve our members.
Was it that at the start, or did you kind of stumble your way into that kind of model? And if so, what was that journey kind of like?
Oh man. Yeah. If you could picture a young child that's just now learning to walk down a sidewalk that's uneven and stumbling and falling and scraping and, you know, get back. That's what it was like.
Yeah.
You know, you got a 3-year-old, right? So yep. Like when your child was probably a year and a half, maybe put them on a really uneven surface, you know, mm-hmm. sidewalk. That's what it was like.
Yeah. How did you manage to get your footing to the degree that you have gotten it today? Is it you know, you mentioned earlier in the conversation, the coaches you had or the mentors you had, was it that or was it something else?
It was two things. It was kind of a personal research of YMCA. And then there's another organization called the High Museum of Atlanta, which is a museum in Atlanta that allows anybody to come into the museum. Mm. And they have a membership model, and they have one membership called the Contributing Member. And what that is, and we have that too, that's kind of the fourth level that we have. We have a contributing membership where there's some people that train with us that are, for example, millionaires. So mm-hmm. they come in, they pay $297, but then they pay $397 when that extra $100 is tax deductible for them. Mm-hmm. And they're a contributing member, and they actually help, you know, that actually goes to help and serve one of our under-resourced members. That idea came from the High Museum. And so I was just kind of piecing it together as I learned about these models that, you know, and the High Museum has been around a long time. So has the YMCA, and they both seem very, you know, sound models. Mm-hmm. So, and I've always been a big proponent of, you know, be a copycat as long as you're copying from the right cat. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like, don't, you know, borrow other people's systems, you know, other people's experience. And even at times, other people's money, it can work out. It works well. And so then I borrowed other people's experience by forming a board with a nonprofit. This, you know, I don't own a thing. You know, mm-hmm. The board is actually my boss. If I'm not, I may have founded this, and this may be a vision that God's kind of brought through my life, but, you know, I'm not the owner, and I can be fired. Mm. As a matter of fact, I've told the board, if I'm not performing or if there's someone better, fire me. Mm. That's important. And so the board, it acts as a council. They act as advisors. And so as I bring things to them, they really help me, you know, work things out, punch things. I mean, it's just so valuable. That's why Proverbs, the books of Proverbs, if you haven't read the book of Proverbs, read them. It's beautiful wisdom in there. It's like a man of many counsels, you know, is going to live a rich life. It's like, that's not exactly what it said, but it's basically that concept of like, when we have counsel around us, we make better decisions. Mm-hmm. Especially good, wise, godly counsel. If it's like, you know, it depends on where your counsel is coming from, but if it's good, sound counsel, it'll lead to good things in life. And so the board has done that, has been that for Noble Clay for sure.
And how did you get the folks that are on the board? I imagine to some degree you had to pitch them this idea before or in the midst of you building it.
Yeah.
What did that process look like? How did you figure out the right people? What was the story that you told them to get them on the board?
Yeah, that was also kind of like your 3-year-old running down a sidewalk. And it was just, I mean, it was tough. It was, but I was challenged by a guy named Jeff, who runs an organization called Plywood People here in Atlanta. I was going kind of through their program as like an idea phase. And he's like, Ben, this is wonderful. He's like, we know you're a good coach, but the question comes to, can you build an organization? Mm-hmm. Can you get a board around you? That's my challenge. Well, when he challenged me on that, I was like, man, it lit a fire in me. I loved it. And I just started making a huge list of everybody I knew who I thought would be good board members and have sound advice. And also, you know, that had like proven track records, you know,
yep.
Businessmen and women and doctors and, you know, so on. And so I reached out to a buddy of mine, Josh Hinks. He was formerly with the Atlanta Falcons as a nutritionist. He went on to Nebraska. Then he went to Jacksonville as an assistant coach. Now he's he was with the Super Bowl champions, Philadelphia Eagles, and still is with them. And I asked him back in like, I think he was with Nebraska, I think, or maybe he was with Jacksonville at that time. And then when he was with Philly, he was early on and he's like, nah, I can't because of, you know, the Philadelphia organization. It was just a conflicting, there's a thing of conflict there. Mm-hmm. But then they won the Super Bowl and he called me, he said, man, I'm ready to be on the board. So I guess when you're in the Super Bowl, you get different privileges. But so that was one story and he came on board. And then a friend of mine I go to church with, he's an anesthesiologist here in town. He's a doctor. I asked him, he loved the vision. And then there's been a couple of business guys that have built some pretty profound businesses. And yep. One of those guys is Ebi Yohan. And he's an Indian guy, he's, you know, does like social, he's basically a social entrepreneur, but in the social good kind of realm. He has a business in India right now, basically cleaning up the environment. So imagine that kind of business. You know, so we have Julius, is Dr. Julius. He's black. You know, we've got Ebi. He's an Indian. We have Lauren, who's our secretary, who this is a great story. She's one of our under-resourced members. Mom of two kids. You know, we invited her on to be our secretary and she's come on and is doing great. And then we have a finance person who I met through Plywood Paper. So I've gone, okay, we need a finance person. We need a good business strategist. We need, you know, obviously there has to be a secretary. You know, we need some doctors on board. We're in a fitness industry. Well, we need a strength and conditioning fitness person, you know, and that's where Josh plays that role. And so they kind of fill needs of like, what's a good, well-rounded board look like? And I just tried to, you know, make a list. And then it's been by God's grace, man, God putting this mission on people's hearts to want to give their time, because the board is completely voluntary. They get paid nothing. And they have fiduciary responsibilities. You know, they got to make sure that we work.
We'll be back in just a minute to hear more about Ben's struggle to build a team to help him pursue this mission and what he hopes the future holds for Noble Clay. But first, this episode of Open Gym is brought to you by Healthy Steps Nutrition and HSN Mentoring. Founded by past guest here on the show, Nicole LeCoin, HSN Mentoring is a comprehensive nutrition business platform empowering gym owners, coaches, and dietitians to spin up an effective program without needlessly reinventing the wheel. HSN recently streamed a nutrition business virtual workshop that they are now giving listeners of Open Gym complete access to for free. In it, you'll learn about the right ways to market your nutrition business, how to up member retention, and what to do about fad diets. To get started, just head to growyournutritionbusiness.com/OG. Again, that's growyournutritionbusiness.com/OG. And if you haven't yet, be sure to go back and listen to my conversation with Nicole here on Open Gym. In it, we talk about why she believes there's never been a better time to start a nutrition program at your gym. But where does the humility come from for you through that process? Because I'm going to generalize here and say people like you, people who are kind of hard charging, who want to build things, who have a vision, I think there's sometimes a tendency to try to shoulder all of that and try to say, okay, I've got to do all of these things. But what I'm hearing from you is a pretty clear recognition that actually what I need to do is find the right people who I can lean on to do the things that they do really well. Was that part of the struggle in figuring this out, part of the stumbling? Or did you always know that that was a necessary and an important piece?
Yeah, I'm completely imperfect, Patrick. I mean, like, I still have pride and I still try to do more than I need to be doing. But I've read books like Good to Great. I'm unorthodox in my education. I didn't go to college, all that stuff, but I read and I love reading. And one of those books, Good to Great, is a great book. It teaches about how to build a business and getting the right people on the bus in the right seats to really be successful. And, you know, Jim Collins is a great guy to study because he essentially studies businesses, you know? And that came about from God placing people in my life to say, hey, Ben, you should read this book. You know, this book has value. And then like encouraging that the application of, so there's like this learned knowledge and then there's this applied knowledge. Like you got to learn it, but then you got to go and apply it. And you learn a little bit more and then you go back and get more learned knowledge and come and, you know, apply it. And then eventually you're going to get, you might be able to teach it one day, right? And then you get even another level of knowledge when you teach it. And so that has been my process to kind of formulate this stuff. It's been all because of God putting people, the right people in my life at the right moments to really say, look, here's a good book. Here's some knowledge. And that's all been orchestrated outside of my own kind of doing. Mm-hmm. And even still, I'm still so prideful to go, you know what? I need to be doing this, you know, and I don't need to be. Mm-hmm. I'm at a place now where I'm like really trying to learn to trust the team to execute, you know, and be okay with them not execute. Now, I might execute it in one way, what I think might be, you know, 100%, but being okay with them executing it at 80%. Am I okay with that? Mm-hmm. Right. That's been the biggest challenge for me recently, is trusting that the team will do it. And it comes down, again, it comes down to pride. It comes down to me not trusting God and me not trusting him to work through other people's talents and gifts and experience and knowledge. That's what it really comes down to, mm-hmm. you know? And so I just say like, man, I get, you know, and the humility is, I guess, the opposite of pride. It's to be, you know, to be lowly, to trust, to be okay with, you know, mm-hmm. those things. And so that's just a lifelong, man, pursuit.
Speaking of books, there's one that keeps popping into my mind as we're talking, and it's a recent book. It's called Manifesto for a Moral Revolution. It's by an author named Jacqueline Novogratz. She started Acumen, which is a for-profit, but does a lot of work, kind of in a hybrid model like you're doing. And one of the things the book talks about is finding this balance between profit and purpose, such that you never go too far towards one at the expense of the other. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, just at Noble Clay, as you're thinking about the future, how do you balance those two things? And I know you're a nonprofit, and so there's that end of it, but you're clearly also need to run efficiently, right? You talked about your the ability for your board to fire you if you're not doing a good job, and part of that job is fiduciary. So I'm just curious, how do you think about this balance between purpose and profit, as you know, in the day to day, as you build this vision forward?
Yeah. So that all comes down to, again, what's the foundation of my life? When I answer the question, what's my destiny? Like, is there eternity? And so in light of eternity, what is, like, where am I basing my choices and decisions? Mm-hmm. You know, if this life is all there is and I'm living for this life, then profit is probably more important mm-hmm. than purpose, or at least it tends to work out that way. You know, but then in the same token, you know, with my worldview, God owns it all and calls us to be stewards of it. And so it's actually very important. It's not like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to just go to eternity and be with God forever and it's hunky-dory. No, this life is very important. He cares about it. It's his. He created it. And now I'm to steward it well. And there's purpose in it. And I find my purpose in that. So then you take that kind of lens and you work it into the day-to-day of mm-hmm. profit and purpose. And you realize, well, the way that the economic system is organized, especially here in America, thank God for that, is you can profit and you need to profit. It is noble to profit because you can do more things and impact more people's lives when you do. So we go, okay, how do we profit with a nonprofit model? We go, okay, well, we have to be a viable solution and be a profitable nonprofit. That's our thinking. We almost don't even think we're nonprofit. Mm. We just treat it as a for-profit. Mm-hmm. And so what that helps us do is then make decisions like what happened when we first opened the gym in January. We had about 30 members coming in out of my garage.
Yep.
Most of them were under-resourced members. And the board challenged me. They go, Ben, do you think you can put a wait list to your under-resourced members and only bring on full-paying members right now? Mm-hmm. And man, I think I can do it. You know, I kind of lied, honestly, I confess. I knew that, like, man, I don't know if somebody comes up and wants to join, I'm probably going to let them in, you know? And yeah. I did. I didn't completely, perfectly kind of shut off the model and make a wait list. We put some on a wait list, but I let some in too, against the board's wishes, really. And so, I confess that, but that was their thing, is like, okay, we have to front load this boat with full paying members because it has to economically work.
Yep.
Right. And so we've been doing that, and now we're starting to get into I'm at a very exciting phase for me personally, because we're now approaching 100 members, and we can then start to bring in more under-resourced or other subsidized members. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to do is cap it off. Our aim is 50-50, at 50% paying, 50, you know, under subsidized.
Yep.
But that's not going to work out perfectly, but that's the kind of aim for the nonprofit. Yep. And so we're getting close to being able to have to put a wait list on the affluent memberships, which to me is fine, because if they come to me, you know what I'm gonna say? Go down, see my friends at, you know, North Atlanta CrossFit, or go to Atlanta CrossFit, or, you know, go to an OPEC gym or whatever.
Yep.
It's totally cool. There's plenty of need, you know, it's like,
yep,
I'll just refer them out.
And that actually leads into where I'd like to kind of wrap up our conversation, at least for now, is what is the vision for this? What do you hope to do with Noble Clay? Where do you hope it's going? Even if it's a 5 to 10 year vision, what is the idea to replicate this in different cities and, you know, all over the States, or is it just make this one location as good as humanly possible?
I can simply just say both and.
Mm.
Both and. We you know, obviously we have to solidify the model here in Atlanta. We want to do a second location in Atlanta. We already have our sights on the area that we want to serve. And I'll shoot you out after this. I'll shoot you an email with like these maps that we've done. It'll blow your mind.
Yeah.
Because you'll see the racial injustices of, you know, how there's been red lines throughout the city that have separated people groups and what that's actually done to the health of people and even lifespan.
Yep.
And then you see the discrepancy of where gyms are. Like, we plotted literally every gym or every fitness entity in Atlanta. We plotted it on a map, and you clearly see the line. It sits right around along that same line that all the other lines sit on. So, and then you see where Noble Clay is positioned in that. But we want to open up a second location and solidify. We know that if our systems are not really humming and dialed in, location number two is going to be tough. If you go to location number three with poor systems, it's going to deconstruct.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to fail. If you go into location number three with really sound systems and a good team, so it's people lead people, but also systems lead people. Both of those elements have to be in play. And if they do, it'll grow gangbusters.
Mm-hmm.
And big vision is that we would like to see it in other cities. Why? Because there's a problem. That's why. I just went to St. Louis. I picked up my boys from North St. Louis and East St. Louis, the hardest cities in Atlanta. It has nothing on Atlanta. Or Atlanta has nothing on, excuse me, Atlanta has nothing on St. Louis in terms of the vastness of the poverty.
Mm-hmm.
It's just unbelievable, man. It make you cry. And then to literally cross Del Mar and be in a $1 million neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
One street. And so that is in St. Louis. I know it's in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's in Phoenix. And I'm sure that those, and I know it's in Miami. I just came back from Miami. And so I know that there's huge need. The question is this model the model that can be a good solution?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question. And I don't know. I hope it is. And I hope, because I believe, like, ultimately, I believe in the coach and client relationship. I believe it's powerful because it's infected my life, impacted my life, and I'm seeing it impact other people's lives. And that one, that discipleship type of model is what it is. And it's really a client, we take a client-centric of philosophy to it. Like we want to come alongside people and be stewards of them, like shepherd them, like guide them, but not dictate over them, right? Say, I'm the one with all the knowledge and experience. Now here, go do this, right? Not that type of model, but rather, what if I become a student of you and learn everything I can about your heart, your emotion, your life, all that you've been through, your physical, you know, abilities, et cetera. And then armed with the information, help guide you in a loving, compassionate way. Mm-hmm. That's the type of coaches that we're trying to develop. And I know that the coach can really have a massive impact and, you know, build their craft and take care of themselves for their life. I mean, it's a both thing. So I want to see in every city, anyone that really wants to have access to a top-notch fitness coach can have it. That's our vision, ultimate vision. And I believe it can happen.
Thank you to Ben for the conversation, to you, as always, for listening, and to HSN Mentoring for sponsoring this episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you have, please leave us a review and consider sharing the show with someone who might find it valuable. Open Gym is part of the Morning Chakra Podcast Network. My name is Patrick Cummings. You can find out more about me and the work I do at functionalbranding.com. And until next week, my friends, stay strong.